It is Tuesday, May the 12th. Joining us for yet another remote talk shop is Brian and Greg Foster from Redeck.
Well, via the Fern Bridge also, exit.
Yeah, I'm currently in the new executive suite of Redeck at the house.
On Main Street.
Yeah.
Oh, gee. Alrighty, Winston, why do we say it?
All right. I cannot pronounce that word, so we're going to go with this one. Parlor. How did the parlor get its name?
Parlor.
French. I would say it's the French word. It means some sort of room thing.
A meeting room of some sort. Women's meeting room. How's that? In a house. Victorian. In castle and all that kind of stuff.
And it's off a parlay.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
I'll give you half credit. Parlor comes from the French parleur, meaning to speak. It's really a conversation room in which you entertain your guests. Drawing room is short for withdrawing room, the room to which you withdraw after a meal.
Okay.
There you go. All right.
I guess we kind of sort of got close. So yeah, I guess we're in our parlors now, huh?
Exactly.
You're in your attic parlor, and I'm in my living room parlor.
Yeah.
Oh, gee. So how tall has the tidal wave been for you?
It's been interesting. We are. When this all happened, we jumped into action on two fronts. One of which was. Well, I guess three fronts. When you think about it. One was just figuring out how to operate our organization in a very quick way, where we all sort of left the office and started working from our individual homes. And so we did that, and that involved, both the changes in processes and changes in technology, and we did that pretty well. The second thing we did was we saw that very early on, that people were experiencing revenue drop almost immediately, right? And of course, that was happening even before the shelter-in-place order. And as that shelter-in-place order came down, we were hearing that it was going to take, that there were much vaunted / maligned PPP program, wasn't even created yet. But there was another SBA, Small Business Administration program, that did disaster loans. But it was becoming very quickly overwhelmed. It was going to take weeks and weeks and weeks to get people money. So we knew that we had to start with our customers, and then we expanded the program to provide quicker loans, to allow people to have some cash flow while they waited for the SBA program to kick in. So that was the second thing we did. And of course, the where we are now is trying to think about and deal with the long-term ramifications, not only for our customers and the community in total at large, but also for our organization. Because we at Redeck don't get any ongoing operating cash from anybody. We live off our portfolio, and so our challenge will be ensuring hoping/ensuring that our business, the small businesses that basically fund Redeck through their borrowing, survive and are able to keep making their monthly loan payments so that we can survive. So we're also in that sort of, I wonder where we're going to be in 6 months to a year, and how do we prepare for that to ensure that the organization remains viable. And so that's, organizationally, that's sort of where we are. We were really fortunate to have existing relationships with the Humboldt Area Foundation, the Headwaters Fund, so that when we put that new program in place, we were able to use funds from them, and then later we were able to do loans, and still are, with the city of Fortuna. So we were able to, you know, when we do a loan, we have three or four different participants in the loan. It kind of spreads the risk and the burden, and we can still get that money out. So we've done about, I think, about 30 of those loans, you know, they keep coming in. We expect another rush probably in June or so as people try to figure out whether or not the PPP worked for them, and maybe some of that cash starts to run out. So we'll see. It's been challenging, I will admit.
Well, and I suspect part of that is because Congress and the Senate, you know, the feds keep throwing different wild cards in. Also, the state's talking about certain things. I know the county and some of the local jurisdictions are having their own different approaches. So you got three or four different big issue plates that are twirling up in the air, and the parameters of one may not necessarily be the same as somebody else. And then if you listen to some of the national stuff, various states have their standards also. So it kind of seems like it's a bit of a challenge just kind of keeping every bit of information in the appropriate column.
Well, and, you know, we've never had anything like this happen before. And it happened so quickly that, you know, typically, certainly the state or federal process, when you're doing legislation, there are a number of hearings and you're kind of working it out. And there's a process in the regulation and implementation of a program at the agency level where, you know, you really kind of work through these issues and try to anticipate, you know, unintended consequences and everything else. But we didn't have time for that this time. You know, it just sort of like happened. And so on that PPP program, which is interesting, is, you know, they rolled that out and started saying, you know, the banks and credit unions and other lenders who were like ADC, who were already participating in the SBA program, the Small Business Loan Program, could start taking in applications. Well, so there was a huge rush, as everybody who reads the news will know or listens to it. But there was very little or even confusing guidance on the agency level about how to use the loans, what was eligible, not eligible, how the administrative procedures are or were with the banks. And quite honestly, some of that's still unanswered. And so
we'll continue with some of those additional questions
here
when we get back. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:23, doing our remote best with Greg Foster this morning. Greg, before the break, you were talking about some of the questions that are still out there, and obviously there are a lot of questions that aren't going to be answered until they get addressed, and who knows when that's going to happen. As far as the businesses in our area, what are some of the rules of thumb, so to speak, for the consumer? Who's open, who isn't, who can be, who isn't? Are you getting indications later this week things are going to change? What is the current status for businesses and for folks that are looking to spend money locally?
Right. So we are in the state moving to what's called a stage two. What that does is allows, you know, curbside retail, manufacturing, logistics, some other retail, schools, childcare, you know, it kind of moves on as you move through that process. What has to happen is, again, this is where, you know, where policy starts moving quicker than the process. The county have to certify these businesses to get them, allow them to be open, and that requires a plan at the business level that they submit to the county. Now, that process is not in place yet, so some people, you know, quite honestly, you know, jumped the gun when they saw this phase two, went ahead and said, okay, we're open, we can do this stuff now, and here are the guidelines, and, you know, and even I, you know, I was confused about the process, quite honestly. So it turns out that ultimately what's going to happen is that those businesses that are opening in this phase two process will, and it doesn't have to be a book, but it has to have a plan in place that has to be certified by the county, and that'll allow them to operate in a legal framework. And then there are benchmarks set at the state level, and that translates down to the counties, because the counties will be also submitting their plans to the state on, you know, when you can move from one state to the other. And that's all spelled out on the state website. But
state transportation and things like that?
Well, this would be, you know, at the state level. And then you have the whole federal level. And this is one of the difficulties with having different counties or jurisdictions interpreting things differently, or in some cases just outright defying the state order and going ahead and doing things, is that, you know, kind of that mindset makes you assume that there's walls around these counties or jurisdictions, and of course that isn't true. And clearly we have people moving across state lines and county lines currently, but that could increase. And so let's say, for example, you know, there's a county that's completely open on one side of Humboldt County, or down the road or whatever, and we have people moving through here who may or may not be under the same rules that we are. You know, that could create some risk, and so it'll be interesting to see, especially if, you know, we don't have good testing in place yet. Nationally, it's getting better, but there's, you know, sort of a patchwork of testing, which is you know, unfortunate, because we don't have good data to kind of really track where the hot spots are, and we can react, you know, more in a pinpoint way. Which, you know, we can't do right now, because those numbers are hard to come by in some cases, and there's just not enough testing. So,
is there a way, Greg? You know, I'm thinking of the businesses that are open, knowing the speed that doesn't tend to be associated with government, whether it's getting a permit or code enforcement or any of that kind of stuff. To have two or three, and whether they're out of OES, whether they're out of code enforcement with the marijuana guys or somewhere, and just have them go door to door and have a list. And okay, you pull up to a business, that if they are open and they haven't submitted yet, just ask them to see a copy of the report. Say yes, no, or, you know, you need to include this or that, and become like an advisor or consultant. Sign it off, and then we'll be back in 2 days to make sure that these changes are implemented. Thank you very much. You know, go forth and conquer, and do it in that fashion, rather than having the business folks then having to spend additional time and submit it somewhere, and now there's a stack of gazillion, and who knows how quickly those things will be turned around, and now you've got 5 or 6 or 7 additional days when that business isn't able to conduct business.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, you hit the nail on the head. And I think, you know, since we don't have something like that in place, I think there's some leniency on and really reliant, you know, right now we're being reliant upon people reporting it through the tip line at the county. And again, I'm not part of that process, but I do get to watch it. and so, you know, there's the, and I asked the question, you know, what's the, you know, certification, you know, the inspection, the enforcement, the education, you know, what is those processes going to look like? And I think to some extent they're still figuring that out at the county level.
So are they able to issue these certificates yet, if they're still trying to figure it out?
Not yet. No. There's a self-certification, and you see some of those, you know, flyers around in restaurants and everything. And those were self-certifications, but I do not believe that there's been any you know, random or planned inspections by public health or anybody from the county on those to certify. And you know, we have...
Holy cow. Holy cow. You're just amazing.
Well,
KINS, it's an information time. It's 8:30.
Hi, this is Brian Papstein. This afternoon, Humboldt County Health Officer Teresa Fankovic is having a press conference and will be announcing the formalization of our current practices, formerly referenced as shelter in place. What does this mean? How does it impact you? Find out as we will be talking with Humboldt County Sheriff Billy Hansel this afternoon. Stay tuned here in the 4 o'clock hour. You'll be able to hear that interview in its entirety, and we'll have it on our website later this afternoon.
Good morning. KINS News and Information Time is 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster, head honcho at REDIC. Greg, with some of the different challenges that are out there, what would you recommend if you were in the private sector coming to REDIC, coming to Headwaters, coming to some of these various entities? You know, at this point, it seems like everybody's kind of familiar with, but nobody really knows the details of, a lot of the different options that are out there. How do you figure out what direction to go? Or like with the EIDL program, you know, initially they said there'll be funding through the end of the calendar year. Well, that disappeared after about 3 days. Right. How do you know where to go for something that is really viable information? Is it go to your banker and let them kind of start working it for you, or your CPA? Is it that simple?
The problem we're having with getting good information, of course, is that these programs are changing all the time. And so, you know, I just read an article this morning, in fact, on the PPP program, you know, and there were kind of general set rules about how that worked. But they're finding that that really doesn't meet the challenge as it presents itself. Now, you know, that thing was written basically, you know, at the end of March. So it's over a month ago, and we know a lot more now than we do in a month ago. So for businesses, I suggest they go to the Small Business Development Center here in Eureka. They've been doing a great job of gathering and disseminating the latest information from the SBA and other places.
Now, are they there? And, are they there so that you can meet them?
You can do it online or call them. And they're doing by appointment some in-person counseling, but most of it is going. You know, they have both employees and contractors. We have a lot of contractors at the SBDC that are former or even current business people. And so they might go meet with the person. They're doing a lot, of course, over the teleconference. I mean, I use Zoom primarily, but there's a lot of different things. You can use, you know, a lot of different products and to do face-to-face video conferencing and sharing of documents and all that. They've been, you know, and they're, as you would expect, their volume has increased exponentially of people needing help. And when this all happened, they really pivoted and transitioned into trying to get as much information and individual assistance, and they do webinars as well, to businesses toward navigating the SBA process, the emergency disaster loans and the PPP program. And they've got that kind of nailed down, and they're moving through it. And now they're looking at developing content around health and safety and meeting the challenges of getting open and how to get open and how to stay open from a public health perspective. And then we're also talking about with them, and they're sort of taking the lead on the cash flow scenario planning. Now that we're over the shock, I wouldn't say we're over the worst, we're over the shock, trying to just deal with immediate cash flow issues, you know, now is the time to start saying, okay, so how does my business look in 6 months or a year? And kind of going through different scenario planning. You know, if this happens, how do I look? If this happens, what do I,
in normal times, that kind of sounds like it would make sense. But, you know, if we've got, you know, some of the early PPP folks, you know, their funding is going to come out or expire, let's say, the middle of June or the middle of July.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. We don't have a clue what the middle of June or the middle of July is going to look like yet based on what the governor is going to allow, what the local folks may or may not allow, how quick these processes are going to be implemented, like with the certification of being able to be open and, you know, retail curbside. You can, well, how do I find out if that fits me or what the choices are? Yeah, I mean, some of those functional things, how can we project out 13 weeks or 6 months, let alone, you know, what's going to be going on next week?
Well, and you hit the nail on the head. And that's why, rather than saying, you know, planning for the future, you know, planning for the known future, I think we're more talking about, okay, so, you know, the decision-making process and what you need to know, you know, if scenario A, scenario B, scenario C, scenario D. Because you're right. And I get asked, you know, the question all the time. And I did a presentation yesterday to a Rotary Club, and question was asked, well, how long do you think it'll take between these stages? And I said, that's really up to, you know, it's really up to not a person in some sense, although it is obviously a decision by the state. But you know, it depends on how the virus acts and what do we see a second wave in the fall? And, you know, do we have hot spots and are, you know, some places doing better than others, and do we have outbreaks, and how do we limit, you know? So, you know, the decisions, and that's what, I mean, you know, people are very frustrated, and we hate, you know, as a species, I think I hate a loss of control and not knowing what's going on and not knowing answers. And one of the things I said to the club yesterday when I was speaking is, listen, you know, when I come to speak to clubs, I'm usually fairly confident that I know the future and know the subject matter that I'm talking about with some expertise and can do predictions about the future, right? Whether it's airport or something else. But in this case, there's, you know, we've become much more comfortable as so-called self-appointed experts on the issues to say, you know, we don't know. I don't know. I just don't, you know, and so it's like, boy, I don't know. So all we can do is best prepare as we can for different scenarios. What happens if this is, you know, how long this takes and all that, and try to go from there and put the, you know, kind of put the thinking in place about being nimble and reactive as best you can. But, you know, the economic and health damage of this thing is going to be longer term. And what that looks like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, that's all part of the challenge. KINS, News and Information, time is 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission wants you to know that local economic development agencies, business resource organizations, financial institutions, and jurisdictions are working together to provide resources for the COVID-19 pandemic. For more information, go to northcoastsbdc.org or call the OES Business Hotline at 268-2527. 268-2527.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:46. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster. Greg, so far we focused primarily on the business operators. What about the employees now? It's a whole different kettle of fish, obviously, because they're not the ones in control. They're not the ones that are, well, I don't know who's in control, but they're not the ones that are out there trying to keep the doors open as much. They're not the ones that's familiar with some of these various governmental programs that are being offered. But what suggestions do you have for those folks? Where do they go? Because there is no SBA or SBDC for employees.
Right. So we do have the job market in Humboldt County, and again, they're not open to the public just now, but they are, you know, online, and there is a phone number there. But, you know, one of the concerns I've heard a lot, and complaints, I guess, is that the system is so backed up at the state level that, you know, the getting unemployment claims and some of the other things that you need are taking longer. And we, you know, we've had 11,697 unemployment claims in Humboldt County through last week. And, you know, that's a huge number. You know, that was the official unemployed number prior to that was about 2,400 people. So, you know, basically the volume has increased a tremendous amount in terms of the number of weekly claims. And so and of course that's true across the whole state. So one of the issues has been that, you know, the PPP program allowed employers to bring people back, but for people who primarily are, you know, living on tips, you know, the bartenders, the waitresses and waiters and all that kind of stuff, it didn't really make sense to go back at minimum wage with no tip income when you're making more money on the unemployment packages, both, you know, the state and federal combined. And the other thing is, of course, is that money runs out, and then when that money runs out, and if we're not back to normal, are you laid off again? And you have to go back on unemployment. So, so that, you know, that's been kind of it's a hard thing for people to, you know, I can't work, or I can work only part time, and I make a tremendous, you know, a lot less money than I used to make. Why would I go back, right? You know, because I still have rent, mortgage, and kids, and all that kind of stuff. So,
do you see there's going to be a large labor shortage, not of potential employees, but available individuals who want to work or who can afford to work?
Well, yeah, and there's two issues there, right? There's the afford to work. You know, can you afford to go back, especially again if you have a lot of tip income or you aren't getting all your hours back? Can you even afford to do it? Is one issue. The other issue is, and California retailers expressed a concern about the association, is that there are, you know, people out there who are, you know, resistant to or outright defying common sense practices around this, including masks. And unfortunately, the frontline workers, the retailers, are the ones that are bearing the brunt of this. And, you know, we've seen nationally where people have been hurt or even killed. There was a security guard at a Dollar General who, you know, wouldn't allow somebody in because they weren't following state guidelines, and the person came back and killed them. And so, you know, we're putting these retail clerks and frontline people in the role of enforcement. And, you know, we tell people no shoots, no shoes, no shirts, no service. We don't have protests over it, but for some reason, when you say, well, you got to wear a mask too, and now it becomes a big protest.